It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. When you arrive during the season, it's not easy.
This is quite the welcome in North London.
It was a big challenge for me.
And it looks like they pinched all 3 points.
This type of situation make me a bit angry.
Surely not another twist.
I was a bit scared before the game.
Oh, and it's in! It's Harry Kane with the header! Look what it means to the new head coach.
We needed to work very hard.
Steven Bergwijn! I don't believe it! They were going home with nothing. They leave with everything.
Yes! It was the tough period.
Oh, and he's curled it into the top corner. He's done it again!
Important 3 points for us.
And Lucas Moura! The fight for Champions League football is going to go right to the wire.
At the end of the season, 1 point instead of 0 point can change your life.
Did you believe top four was possible?
Yes.
Hello and welcome to The Last Word on Spurs. We hope you're keeping very, very safe and well. Thank you so much for joining us for yet another summer transfer window update. Delighted to be joined alongside me by, listen, becoming a regular on This Last Word on Spurs. And boy, do we love it. You know, the listeners and the viewers love it. So we've got the brilliant Matty Hayes, of course, runs a wonderful YouTube channel. Matty, we've done it again on another signing day. Spurs, we've got a summer transfer window update. How are you, Matty? Love to have you back on Last Word on Spurs.
Yeah, delighted to be back on. Always a pleasure coming on here. And I think the more we schedule these shows, the more signings we make. So it's the future of the summer is completely in our hands. But pleasure to be on here. And of course, a pleasure to be on with Jack as well.
Yeah, absolutely superb and correctly right. But Matty, we are going to run out of journalists soon to interview, bearing in mind if Spurs do keep signing these players. So we may have to get looking and scouring the market. But we've had some really top quality journalists join us on Last Word on Spurs. And once again, we're joined by journalist royalty tonight. We've got the wonderful Jack Pitbook from The Athletic. Jack, lovely to have you on Last Word on Spurs. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me, guys. I'm really pleased to be back on the show. And yeah, I'm good, thanks. Pretty hot, like everyone. But looking forward to the return of the Premier League, just a few weeks away now.
Absolutely. And I must just say, as Jack has referenced to there, we are recording in the hottest day in the UK. You can probably see it from my forehead at the moment. Bearing in mind where I'm recording, there is no fan access because that would affect the audio version. So I'm suffering for all you listeners out there on Spotify, on wherever you're listening to this podcast on audio. This is for you. For watching on YouTube, sorry I look like this. And you have to deal with maybe beginning to reach for the flannel every 15, 20 seconds. But such is life in the UK. We've got heat like never before. And hope we've got some wonderful heat coming your way on The Last Word on Spurs this evening with the wonderful Jack Pitbook from The Athletic and the brilliant Matty Hayes, as we recalled, as we've mentioned there, on a day where Spurs have made their number sixth signing of the summer in Jed Spence. We know it feels like it's been signed God knows how many times, but yes, it is done. Jed is Spurs and Spence is for Spurs. So, like I say, delighted to have him on over the line. We're going to talk about him in just a second. But Jack, I think it's only right. I mean, for anyone that doesn't know what you do out there, and I can't believe they don't in the Spurs community, do you want to give us a bit of a background at your role with The Athletic and how you cover Spurs in all different extremes?
Sure. So I spend most of my time covering Spurs for The Athletic. I work very closely alongside my colleague Charlie Eccleshare, who also does Tottenham. You can hear us both on the View from the Lane podcast, which comes out twice a week during the season, once a week at the moment. Charlie's just come back from Korea, where he went on the Tottenham tour, where he did a brilliant piece with Son's family about the Son Football Academy in Chuncheon, where Son is from, which honestly, if readers out there want a bit of an insight into Sonny's background, why he is like he is, why he's so committed, so dedicated and disciplined, have a read of that piece. It's a fascinating article. So me and Charlie head up our Tottenham content. I really enjoyed doing it. We obviously do the games, the podcasts, and yeah, it's really good fun.
Absolutely, Jack. Can I say, I have to vouch, View from the Lane is one of my guilty pleasures to listen to on a morning, like I say, Tuesday, Monday, whenever it comes out. Always a great listen to the pod. Make sure you check those guys out. Always great content. Always brilliant Spurs talk. And, you know, Jack, I think that pod like us last season, you had to cover some really down low moments. Of course, Turf Moor being one. There's been, as you've seen, Jack, over the last course of how many years following Spurs, reporting Spurs, doesn't feel like there's been a better time over the last few years than right now, Jack. Do you get that feeling that there's a real momentum around the football club in such a positivity, like maybe you haven't seen before in such a long time, maybe back to the Pochettino times?
Yeah, I'd say the mood right now and the prospects of the team right now are as probably as good as they were in the peak Pochettino years. Maybe they need a full season under Conte to really prove they're at that level. But if you think back to the peak Pochettino years, they got 86 points in 2016-17, which is by a mile their best league season in the modern era. I think that has to be the target for Tottenham this season. I think they can do it. I think they've got a good enough manager, good enough players to get there. So I really feel like, you know, because it's been a pretty tough last 4 years at Tottenham, ever since the Pochettino team started to decline in the 2018-19 season. But right now, I do feel like Tottenham have on an upward trajectory again. Conte's obviously absolutely massive for them, and they're getting the players in that he needs.
Absolutely. Well, let's dive into what's been a crazy, chaotic, positive summer of supporting Spurs. We have enjoyed our busiest summer to date, I think it's fair to say so far. 150 million spent. Plus, Spurs, the busiest of all the teams so far in the Premier League with regards to the transfer market. And, well, like I say, the last 18 months, we've just seen Conte lead Spurs back into the Champions League. The signings of Ivan Perisic, Yves Bissouma. We've got Richarlison, Clément Longley, Fraser Forster. And now adding to that, of course, the signing of Jed Spence. Only one place to start, really, Jack, for you. What have you made of Spurs' overall summer business? And is it quite incredible that we record here still mid-July, and Spurs have made six signings?
Yeah, it's been really, really impressive. And what I think has most stood out to me about Tottenham's transfer window has been, it feels to me as if that Daniel Levy and the club have taken a different approach this summer to what they usually do in the transfer market. You can see this, for example, Ivan Perisic, legendary player, had a fantastic career at club and for Croatia and for his clubs. But he's 33 years old. Tottenham don't really sign 33-year-olds. Like, yeah, they got Fernando Llorente as a backup in 2017. But really, I think you have to go all the way back to Edgar Davids for the last time Tottenham signed a really, really established, experienced player like Perisic. So that's a change in policy. Richarlison is a change in policy. I love watching Richarlison. I think he's a really exciting player. I think the fans will really take to him at Tottenham. But the fact is, Tottenham are not in the habit of spending 50-plus million quid on a guy who's not even a guaranteed starter. That's not what Tottenham do. That's what City and Liverpool and United do, really. So the fact that and then on top of all of that, you've got the earliness of their deals this summer. Tottenham don't usually act early. You know, we can all remember in 2012 when they tried to get João Moutinho on the last night of the transfer window. Even in 2019 when they tried to get Dybala on the last night of the window. It's not really like that anymore. Tottenham are being proactive. They're being assertive. They're trying to get the players they want in first. And that's a big change from Daniel Levy. That's not usually how he conducts his business. So in all those ways, I think we're seeing a different Tottenham approach to the transfer market this summer. And that's really interesting to me.
Absolutely. Matty, let's hand the show over to you, my friend. Let's unmute Matty first. Even he can't quite believe there's six signings over the line. Over to you, Matty.
I apologise. I'm speechless. Look, given the fact that we got that Jed Spence announcement today, I think it's the only place we can really start. And as Ricky mentioned, becoming the sixth signing for Spurs already, with a month and a half left in the window. This Conte transformation, like you were saying, how different it's been to previous windows, that transformation is fully underway. And looking back at the Pochettino era that you mentioned as well, a lot of what we did there was signing young players from the English Football League. Of course, Dele Alli being the biggest success story on that in Pochettino's time. But we're back at it again. What's your overall view on the move for Jed Spence?
Yeah, I think the Spence one is really interesting. Like you say, I think it's kind of more of a traditional Tottenham-type deal than it is this kind of like new era Paratici-type deal. Like it's, you know, there's what paying, I think, what, £12.5 million up front for a very talented player, but he's, you know, hasn't played in the Premier League before. So really, it's the kind of deal, like you said, like with Dele, for example, which Spurs used to do quite a lot of. I'm really looking forward to seeing him play. I think he had a fantastic season at Nottingham Forest. What I'm interested in, and I really don't know the answer to this, I'd be really curious to hear your guys' take on this, is what's the pecking order going to be for the right wing-back next year? Because they've got, I reckon Matt Doherty is probably still first choice ahead of Spence, just because Spence is going to take a while to get up to speed with Conte's methods. Doherty, I thought, played really well until he got injured last season. But then Emerson finished the season quite well, but then they might sell Emerson. And then Lucas Moura has been played right wing-back the other day. So maybe that's an option. So they've kind of got four possible options there. I don't imagine that all four of them will still be at the club at the end of the window, but I don't know. So I'm really interested to see how that one develops.
You know, it's funny you say that, Jack. I mean, I think the conscious feeling around Spurs is that there's been a need, as you said, to kind of go back to that model where we've signed, obviously, young English talent. We look at Carl Walker. And, you know, again, co-host of this show, Lee McQueen, always says that for the sake of Spurs selling Walker, Spurs never replaced him adequately. And we're all hoping Jed Spence will be that player. But again, you know, we're buying a player that I think we all have to understand is coming from the Championship. It's going to actually have to be a step up. I think from when I've seen him, if I'm being honest with you, Jack, for me, Spence still looks quite raw. I think he's a player that will need to have quite a significant amount of coaching to get up to the level that Antonio Conte wants him to be. And I think obviously what the key thing is that I see a lot across social media in terms of Spurs fans, what they're asking is this a Conte signing? From your understanding, Jack, because like I say, we all feel this is more of a kind of going back to the old days for Tottenham in terms of signing young English talent. Do we know if this is a player that Conte really wanted? Or is this more of a Spurs signing out? Anything intel you know internally on that?
I don't know anything specific on that, but I certainly think it's kind of consistent with the sort of traditional Tottenham policy. And I completely agree with what you said there, Ricky, about how fans are going to have to be really patient, I think, with Spence. You know, some of the guys who've come in this summer, you can plug them straight into the team and they'll be fantastic. Bissouma, been brilliant in the Premier League since he joined Brighton. Richarlison's been fantastic in the Premier League for years. Perisic has won it all basically at club level. He can come straight in. Spence just doesn't have that big, you know, he doesn't have top level experience in the same way. So I think he's going to have to learn all of Conte's style of play. It's going to be a big adjustment, you know, on and off the pitch. So I would certainly advise Tottenham fans to be a little bit more cautious and patient with Spence. And that's why I think the start of the season, it makes more sense to play Doherty and then maybe bring Spence in gradually over the course of the season. That's my view.
Yeah, we will ask you, Jack, later in the show, just in terms of how you see that panning out with regards to Emerson and Matt Doherty, because obviously Spence coming in means it's three players for that right wing-back spot, essentially. And you would feel that the players would like to have an adequate amount of game time between them. It feels with three of them there, we might be slightly overloaded. Let's go over to you, Matty. I'm sure you've got a couple of questions maybe to ask Jack with regards to Spence.
Yeah, look, I think for me with Jed Spence, I think one thing that I've kind of noticed with some of the targets that we've had throughout the window is that he seems to bring in players who have what I class as the uncoachables. Like Jed Spence, he has the mentality, you know, he has the character, he has the kind of the raw ability. I think that there is still, I suppose, an element of naivety in the way that he plays. And look, I can't say I've watched him too much, looking at kind of different analyses of that. But the big one for me is the concern about a player stepping up from the Championship up to a Champions League level team. And for me, it's kind of the question you posed at the start as well, Jack, with what is the pecking order? Because I kind of thought with Jed Spence coming in that maybe we'd see Emerson and Doherty go and then we get maybe a more established right back to be the kind of starter. But I think it's spoken a lot about with Ryan Sessegnon on the other side. But do you think Spence is a player who could really learn from Ivan Perisic from having that more experienced, more successful player in that team as well?
Yeah, I definitely think that for Spence, being around being around senior players is really helpful. Like Conte spoke a lot. I remember last season at press conferences, he used to talk about how valuable it is to have an experienced player because they can help to bring through the young players and teach the young players, you know, the expectations and standards of being a top player. Like I remember one press conference, he pointed to the example of Zlatan Ibrahimovic going back to AC Milan and what a big impact he's had around the place. So I definitely think that Spence can learn from those guys. But yeah, as we said, like, Spence is not going to be a Premier League level top player immediately. I mean, if with it, looking, you guys compared him to Dele Alli, and obviously Dele Alli is a rare example really of a player who came quickly into the Premier League, not even, you know, all the way down from MK Dons, and he was really good instantly. But I kind of feel like that was a bit of a one-off. Like, that kind of, generally speaking, that doesn't happen. Like, generally speaking, a young player coming from the lower leagues up into a really good Premier League team takes them a long time to settle. So, look, if Spence settles as quickly as Dele does, that would be great news for Tottenham. But, you know, I think people should have realistic expectations about this.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely fair. I mean, listen, we'll... And the last question I really want to ask you on Spence from my end, Jack, is it does appear that Spurs seem to be the only club in for him. That was confirmed by Chris Wilder, who said essentially that Spurs were the only real club negotiating for the player. We knew there was interest there from Forest. And from what you understand, intel-wise, Jack, was there anybody else on Spurs' radar for that right wing-back spot? We saw tentative links last week for Carl Walker-Peters, but it feels that Spurs were almost trying to... Maybe rush Borough into completing that deal for Jed Spence when there was links to Carl Walker-Peters. From what you understand, was he always Spurs' first choice for that right wing back slot this summer?
I think so, yeah. I think it's been clear for a while that Spence was the number one choice in that slot. I can't remember hearing any other serious names floated, or I can't remember hearing anything. I remember back in before the window, some people wondering, do you reckon they're going to go in for Adama Traore a third time? And I'm thinking, no, surely not a third time for Adama Traore. But I know since then, I haven't heard anyone suggesting to me that there was any other option than Spence. And the other thing we should say about Spence as well, which is relevant here, homegrown. That's absolutely so important to Tottenham. Is, yep, you know, it's difficult putting a squad together for the Champions League with the right number of homegrown players, particularly because of some of the unique circumstances at Tottenham. So for them to have got in Fraser Forster and Jed Spence as two extra homegrown players this summer, really important.
Yep, and as we mentioned, Spence, five-year contract, that fee understood to be £12.5 million with another £7.5 million in potential future add-ons. Spurs have got their man. Spence is Spurs. We are going to go for our first break of the show. For our listeners that are on audio, taking into that break, you are going to hear Jed Spence as a Spurs player talking for the first time on his delight of signing for Tottenham Hotspur Football Club.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Being in the Premier League and a big club like Tottenham Hotspur, it's a dream come true. I'm just thankful that I've got here and I'm going to get the opportunity to play for the club. If everyone wants to play in the Premier League, you know, as a kid you watch it. It's a target of mine and it's a big club, Champions League football. And obviously you've got some of the best players that play here. So, I mean, it's a privilege to be here. Last year we won promotion with Nottingham Forest. And yeah, it was just a great season for me. It was just stuff of dreams, really. So I bring excitement, skill, speed. I just want to excite the fans and just play well. Can't wait to meet the players, obviously the staff and the managers, and just train with everyone and gelling with the team. I grew up with Ryan at Fulham, through the ranks, like through under 12s to 16s. Played Premier League tournament together, won that. He went with the first team at a young age, and obviously his career's gone very well so far. So just be prepared to work hard. So yeah, I'm just ready. I'm a very chilled character. So yeah, I'm very humble. Everything's about football with me. Just dedicate my whole life to it. So yeah, nothing else, just football, really. Hi Spurs fans, Jez Spence here. Can't wait to see you at the stadium. Come on, you Spurs.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
For our watching audience on YouTube, and for everybody else who's melting in the background due to the sun of the UK, thank you so much, as always, for joining us here on The Last Word on Spurs. I'm going to hand over to Matty to kickstart the second half of the show.
Look, we've heard so many times in the past about Spurs kind of backing managers and fully committing to different kind of eras of the club. We've got something concrete this summer with that investment of £150 million of equity funds into the club, of course, of which £100 million has already been drawn down. So it's clear that Tottenham are really backing Conte in the window. There's been reports that we're maybe not done in the signings yet, that we're still in the market for a creative midfielder and ideally another defender. But at the moment, the focus is, of course, on outgoings. Before we do get onto those outgoings, are there any other positions that you think Tottenham may target in this window, or at the moment, is it purely that midfielder and defender?
I think what the thing is, I don't think they need any more players, really. So I think a lot of it will depend on who's out there. Like, if they can get a really good, there's obviously been a lot of chatter recently about will they go back in for another number 10, for example. I think they're pretty well stocked in attacking positions. I can see why they might want a 10 because they just don't have one at the moment. Like, on the assumption that Ndombele and Lo Celso are going, given they, and you know, Eriksen's gone to Man United, they just don't really have someone who can do that in case Conte wants to change the system. So maybe if a very good player in that position, or maybe another centre-back, or maybe a right wing-back or whatever comes up, then maybe they'll move if they think it makes sense and they've got a good deal. But I don't think I feel like they've done the first phase. You know, they've got the players who they need, and now it's just a case of selling the players they don't want and then seeing what else comes up, because you never know what might pop up in the final weeks of the window.
Okay, interesting. We are going to grill Jack a bit later on about names that we have seen linked in that central midfield area. So don't worry and don't panic, Jack. It won't be too much of a grilling. It will be very, very light. But I just want to turn the focus and shift towards Antonio Conte, the head coach. I mean, listen, he seems really happy at the moment, Jack. He's even doing Sonny's iconic celebration in pre-match press conferences. I don't think any of us could believe we would ever see that based on his mood at Turf Moor. I don't need to remind you about 6 months ago now to that day. God, it's, a lot has changed at Tottenham, all for the positive. So just want to ask you, I mean, bearing in mind that we've obviously seen for Spurs, you know, 6 signings come in. The majority of these, of course, on long-term contracts, obviously bar maybe Fraser Forster, Clement Longley. How happy do you think he is at the moment, Jack? Maybe scale of 1 to 10, Conte?
Yeah, I'd say he's really happy. I'd say he... I actually haven't seen him. Like, I wasn't on the tour. I haven't seen him in a press conference. But everything I hear is that he's been delighted. I'm told that he came back to pre-season training a few weeks ago with a spring in his step, but he's very happy with the players he got in. Obviously, you know, he would have made very clear to Levy and Paratici that he wanted top players. He wanted players to come in early so they could do a full pre-season, because he's never done a pre-season with these players before. And he's got what he wanted. He's got quality, he's got experience, he's got depth. I think at the moment, Antonio Conte is very happy. And like you say, It feels miles away from Turf Moor. I remember after that game when he gave that press conference, and this was right at the end of press conferences still being on Zoom, you know, before we went back to face to face. And so we were all sat up in the top of Turf Moor in the press box, watching on our laptops while Conte gave his press conference from a little room inside Turf Moor, and the rain was coming in sideways. So we were all soaked. We were freezing cold. Tottenham just got beaten. It felt like top four was dead. And watching Conte, and he was, I mean, look, people might disagree whether it was it strategic, was it emotional, was it politics. At the time, he sounded like a man who's going to chuck in the towel. Like he just sounded all over the place. And hearing him say, "Oh, maybe I'm not right. Maybe it shouldn't be me. I'm going to have a conversation with the club. I'm on this big salary and I'm not delivering. And I can't believe we've lost 4 out of 5, whatever it was." At the time, I thought, "Oh my God, it's not going to work. He's going to walk. They're going to have to get a new manager in." So right now, 6 months on, it feels completely different from that very strange and dramatic night at Burnley back in February.
Mm. Out of interest, before Matty comes in, so interested to ask you, Jack, how have you found Conte to interview, to be at pressers with? How do you find him as a person in comparison to Nuno, who I know all of you guys very struggled to even get a word out of? I mean, I don't know what they would have done with those pressers. They would have. I don't know how you stitched together 6-7 minutes with Nuno, to be honest with you.
Well, it's different with Nuno because Nuno is in the era where press conferences are all on Zoom. So it's never really going to be as good as if you've got a manager face-to-face. And look, I liked Nuno as a guy, but he just didn't really say much. Like he was, and I understand why, because he probably didn't feel that confident, comfortable in the job, really. Like he knew he got it under strange circumstances, and I never really got the feeling that he was that kind of sure of himself in the job. Whereas with Antonio, because I used to, when in my old job at the Independent, I used to cover Chelsea. So I would see Conte in his press conferences there. And I do really like him. He's probably not what you would expect in press conferences in the sense that he's not like a kind of, so like Pochettino was like a big talker, loved telling anecdotes, loved like being kind of funny and telling stories and like engaging. Like he loved engaging with people. Like he was a big people person, Pochettino. Whereas Jose was often quite moody, but when he was in a good mood, he could be hilarious. He could be very funny. He could be really interesting on things like tactics. And unlike Pochettino, Jose would love to go like, "Oh, this is my tactic for this game. That's my tactic for that game. This player I've got on the team for this reason." And so when the mood took him, he could be an amazing talker. Whereas Conte's not really like that. Like he's very, like with Conte, he's not like a charismatic, outgoing guy like Pochettino or Mourinho. He doesn't have, and a lot of the times in press conferences, a lot of what he says is quite predictable. And and I'm not criticizing that at all. Like, you know, he's speaking a second language. I don't think he enjoys telling anecdotes in the same way. I don't think he enjoys like dominating the room like Pochettino and Mourinho did. Every now and then he'll be absolute dynamite because if he wants to hammer someone, like maybe one of his players or more often an opponent or perhaps a referee or it may happen recently with Arteta, or maybe he wants to get a message out, or maybe he wants to have a dig at Levy or whatever. So if he's in the mood, if Conte wants to get something out, he can be really entertaining because when he goes for it, he really goes for it. You know, like the Arteta stuff or like his rounds with Jose in the past. But a lot of the time with Conte, he will just be quite, he's kind of, you feel like he's got his script, he's quite predictable, and he won't kind of go off on tangents in quite the same way. So it's always an absolute privilege to be in the room with one of these guys and to learn about what they're thinking and what their plans are for a particular game or whatever. But Conte, as much as I admire him as a coach, and he is amazing, I don't think he quite has that same presence in the same way that Mauricio and Jose did.
I think it's so funny to hear the difference there between Conte in the press conference room and on the touchline, because it just seems to be two completely different characters and completely different men. But I think everyone watching would be quite angry at us, Jack, if we didn't, on the point of Conte, ask about a potential future deal. And look, all the Spurs summer signings have signed long-term contracts. Conte himself in Korea was quoted as saying he's only getting started at Spurs. But do you think, or do you know anything about Tottenham potentially trying to get into negotiations with Antonio Conte? I mean, the current contract, 12 months left, with then an option to extend by another 12. But Tottenham fans, I'm seeing everyone on Twitter talking about their, you know, Conte and Kane double announcements, which I'm sure is a bit ahead of themselves at this point. But do you know anything about potential contract talks for the gaffer?
At the moment, I haven't heard anything to say that this is ongoing or this is imminent. That said, clearly this will be the number one thing on Daniel Levy's mind, because you know Daniel Levy moved heaven and earth to get Conte to the club. He tried to get him once, he'd said no. He tried again, he got him. It's Daniel Levy getting Conte is the best thing I think to happen to Tottenham for quite a while. And Levy is proud of the fact that he's got Conte here. He's desperate to make Conte a success. He has found all this extra money for Conte this summer. He's delivered him his players. So, of course, Levy will be thinking about this all the time. The question is, really, and you know, if Conte wants, you know, another big deal on good salary, I'm sure Levy would give it to him because Tottenham got the money, and there's no question, you know, Levy, it's so important to Levy to have Conte here as manager. I guess the question really is, does Conte want to be tied to Tottenham for the next few years? And I imagine that the answer to that will turn out, you know, we'll find out this season. You know, if Tottenham are having a really good season, if they're having a title chase, if they're kind of in and around City and Liverpool, then I'm sure Conte will probably think, where else would I want to manage? Why would I want to go and manage anyone else? That said, if for whatever reason they have a difficult season, they're not in around, you know, they're not competing for trophies, they're not, maybe they're going to slip out the top four, I don't know, then maybe under that situation, Conte would say, you know what, I've done my 18 months and I should look somewhere else. So I think a lot of it will depend on what happens on the pitch this season. I think Levy, whatever happens, will push for it. At the same time, it's just possible that Levy might think, I don't necessarily want to give this guy like a really long deal because, you know, we saw it happen at Chelsea where Conte was incredible in his first season, then his second season was just a disaster. And he basically, you know, walked through a second season, then he got sacked, and then it got legal, and it was a bit of a mess, really. So I think, maybe there might be a tiny bit of reluctance on that point, but generally speaking, Levy is delighted to have Conte at the club, and I'm sure this will be on his mind. What gets agreed and when, I mean, who knows? You know, Conte kept Tottenham hanging this season, didn't he? When it came to his future. So I don't think he'll be in a rush to say, oh, of course, Daniel, I'll sign tomorrow for the next 3 years. I think I think we've got to be prepared for this to drag on.
You know, it's interesting, Jack, on that. And Matty, I feel free to come back on this as well. It's just the fact that, obviously, with the Perisic deal, we made it clear that he was keeping an eye on Spurs, even in that North London derby game, which obviously Matty was part of the show for. So all that speculation over the summer as to whether Conte would stay, whether he would walk, it does appear, Jack, that he kind of already had his mind made up. Maybe it was dependent on that Norwich game, the final game of the season, if Spurs had got Champions League. But do you think, maybe looking back now in hindsight, that maybe it was blown a little bit out of proportion as to whether he would stay, given the way in which we've seen the interview come out from Perisic that he has been looking at Spurs before the Arsenal game? What do you think? Or do you think it was really all down to whether the club would have achieved the top four this season?
Yeah, I know that a lot of fans think that. My own view, personally, is that it wasn't blown out of proportion. I broke the story on that Friday morning that they were having this big meeting in Turin and it looked like he was going to stay. But even a few days before then, I was being told by, you know, my really trusted sources on this that somebody told me it was 50-50. People were saying that, you know, even people close to Conte who generally know what Conte's thinking don't know what's going to happen. And so it's not like, you know, I know why Tottenham fans would think, oh, this is just the media trying to, you know, destabilize Tottenham. But genuinely, my impression, what right up in the kind of week or two before this, was that it was still up in the air. And clearly, getting fourth place was hugely important. I think if they hadn't got fourth, I think, it would have been harder for Conte to stay. I don't know. But I think the combination of fourth, remember there was that run where they sealed fourth and then they got the 150 million injection from Enoch.
Yeah.
And then I'm sure at that point it would have been very clear. That was basically, I think, or a big part of that would have been Daniel Levy saying to Conte, I've changed. Look, you know, maybe you had doubts in the past about the money. And I know that previous Tottenham managers have had frustrations with the money and how much there's been. But look, This is not like the Tottenham of 2 years ago or 5 years ago anymore. You know, the money is here. We're going to get you the players. We're going to get them early. So I do think that maybe that week or two before the announcement or before it came out that Conte was staying did change things. But I do think there was the possibility that he wouldn't stay. Like it was a real possibility that he wouldn't stay, even though, of course, in practice, he did end up staying.
Okay, interesting. I feel bad for the amount of time I've taken up there, Matty. So feel free, if you want to ask Jack about, obviously, the club tour that they recently went on, feel free to take that question, Matty, if you wish.
I actually have a question on Conte. I want to quickly get in there.
Do.
I don't know if there even is an answer to this one, but From my point of view, I was always looking at the situation with Conte, and like you said, the uncertainty about him going. And I had the exact same feeling after that game at Turf Moor. I remember doing a panic stream on my own channel, thinking it was all coming to an end. But for me, kind of in hindsight, looking at it, do you know anything about maybe within that contract? Was there a get out of jail free clause in there for Conte? Because ultimately, even after that Burnley game, there was what, almost 18 months left in that contract, and this summer there was 12 months left. So, do you know, would it have been that easy for Conte to just walk away, or would there have to have been some sort of agreement with Spurs, do you know?
It's a really good question. I don't know if there was a clause, but I know that if he'd walked, I really don't think it would have been easy for him to just walk out the door. But I think he would have, I remember somebody once suggesting to me that what he would have needed is to go to another job. Like, for example, to replace Pochettino at PSG. Because that way you can have, maybe PSG could buy out the last year of his contract or whatever, and Tottenham don't lose out. But I just can't see Daniel Levy accepting Conte walking out of the job and Conte breaking his contract like that. I don't know the details of his contract, but I think it would have been tough. But equally, I think through this whole process, like, it has been politically convenient for Conte to create this kind of negative energy, if you know what I mean. Like, it helps Conte to do this whole, like, oh, isn't it awful? Maybe I'm going to have to quit. Like, I don't know if I can do this. It's so hard. Isn't it hard being Tottenham manager, kind of thing? And I know that sometimes, you know, Tottenham fans have been frustrated by this, and I understand why, because, you know, Conte does at times lay it on quite thick with all this. But equally, I think, you know, maybe he's just being emotional. Maybe he's being political. If he is being political, it's kind of worked, because, you know, Daniel Levy's now gone and found him this money for players. And Levy is really, really important to Levy to keep Conte happy and to make sure the Conte era is a success. So I actually think, you know, the Conte-Levy relationship, which is obviously so important, at the moment, they're both getting what they want, which is great for Tottenham.
Absolutely. Totally agree. And it's the right time to go for our next break of the show for our listeners and audio.
Phoenix 51 is a powerful employee technology enabling organizations to make data-driven decisions at every stage of the employee journey, from hiring through benchmarking and development too. The platform provides detailed analytics on the most important asset in your business, your people, enabling organizations not only to make the correct hiring decisions, but also how to benchmark, train, and retain them. Phoenix 51, powering your people decisions through every part of the employee journey.
For our watching us on YouTube, there's nearly over 1,000 of you, 800, 900 of you watching us live. So thank you so much, as always, for all of your incredible support. We're joined by the brilliant Matty Hayes, who runs a wonderful YouTube channel. And we're joined by The Athletic's Jack Pitbrook, giving us his time to discuss all things Tottenham Hotspur on a day in which Spurs have made their sixth signing of the summer in Jed Spence. I know we can't quite believe it. Again, just a reminder, it is 40 degrees here in the UK. I am melting, as you can probably tell. We are trying to deal with the heat. And like I say, everybody out there, stay safe, stay well. But the show is hot, so we will carry on where we left off. And we're going to turn our attention. I think we're going to turn our attention to the pre-season tour very quickly, Jack. I mean, you said your colleague over there, Charlie, who had on the show recently, was in Korea, enjoying the Find the Lights. We saw some wonderful food alongside Ali Gold, a friend of the show as well. He looked like he was really enjoying the cuisine out there, as well as the football, of course. Must stress, none of these journalists enjoy this. This is all part of the job. There's no enjoyment of this. It's whatsoever. I am intrigued to know, Jack, from your perspective, speaking to the likes of, obviously, Charlie, Son Mania, just absolutely insane out there, isn't it? Just a love for Son. And I think it's important to say that, you know, for a tour like this, Jack, it's one of those things where this will give Spurs wonderful marketing, not just only this summer, but for future summers to come. I mean, what have you made overall of the tour? Because it feels like it can only be deemed as really a success, regardless of the actual training that went into, obviously, we saw with Spurs players collapsing under Conte's regime there. What did you make of it overall in terms of the tour itself, Jack?
Yeah, it seems to me like a big success. Like, obviously, you know, the games don't matter really at all, ultimately. What matters is, I mean, one, Conte got his, you know, did some heavy pre-season. I'm sure that really, if you ask Conte completely honestly, what would you want to do in pre-season? He'd probably just say, train at Tottenham. You know, he doesn't want them flying across the other side. He wouldn't want them flying to the other side of the world to do all these kind of media and sponsor fan commitments and all that. But, you know, modern football is what it is. So teams have to do this. But Conte has got a lot of training for the players. That's great. You know, he's never had a preseason with these guys before. I imagine that Conte probably thinks it's time for you boys to do a bit of work. You know, like we didn't. Obviously, Conte showed up on the 1st of November, I think it was this season. They were playing two games a week, so they didn't really have a time to do proper training. So now Conte's really been able to hammer the players and get them to do some running. So from that perspective, big success. The other perspective, why I think it, which you touched on, Ricky, was building the brand of the club. You know, what if you look at the sort of Enoch era at Tottenham the last 21 years, a really big part of it has been building the brand of the club around the world. How can we make Tottenham bigger around the world? And, you know, a lot of that's been focused in the US, where Tottenham are more and more popular all the time. I think I feel like Tottenham are like the kind of trendy team in the US at the moment. But equally, they're really popular in Southeast Asia and in South Korea. And, you know, obviously it helps. They've got the brilliant Son Heung-min who they've had for 7 years now. But I imagine that, and this is just me guessing, but I imagine a conversation they have inside the club all the time is, how can we capitalize on Son? How can we help use Son to grow our fan base around Asia? How can we reward our fans in Korea who obviously like really passionately support the club and love Son? What can we do to make them feel part of the sort of broader Tottenham family? So yeah, from that perspective, it's a huge success because it's obviously, you know, one thing we know about modern football is it's really, if you're a big club, you need a global fan base. Like it's really, really important to have a global fan base because you can, you know, sell products and make money and everything. So, yeah, I feel like it's been a really, really big success. I think the people that went on it had a good time. It seems to be good from a commercial perspective, football perspective. And, yeah, I'm really interested to see what they do next summer.
Absolutely. Matty, let's hand over to you.
Yeah, look, back onto the topic of the hour, the transfers. And before we do go on to the outgoings, I want to give you the promised grilling on the number 10s. We've had a few links in the last couple of days with James Maddison of Leicester. I think the Spurs fan base are maybe running away a little bit. There's been Lucas Paqueta of Lyon, who's been in the mix for a while, and Nabil Fekir of Real Betis, I saw mentioned yesterday as well. Can you see any of those players signing for Spurs this summer?
I'm not sure. Look, there's been a lot of chatter about Maddison in the last week or two. Personally, I haven't been able to confirm anything on this. You know, I've been trying, I've been speaking to contacts, but I'd be lying if I said I have concrete, solid information on what Tottenham are doing on Maddison. I suppose I can kind of see why it makes sense. Like, he's homegrown. They don't have a player that plays in that position. Leicester maybe could do with selling. He's got, I think, 2 years left in his Leicester deal. Equally, he's a player Tottenham have wanted for a long time. You know, I remember a long time ago, like writing stories about Tottenham trying to sign Maddison from Coventry City when he was just a kid. When they, you know, around, I think maybe the year after they got Dele, or maybe the year that they did get Dele. And then I think Tottenham had another look when he was at Norwich City. So clearly he's been on the radar for a long time. That all said, Conte's very wedded to the 3-4-3. You know, he's not going to change the system for James Maddison, I don't think. Maybe it would suit him to get Maddison in, have the option to go to the 3-5-2, play Maddison as a 10. You know, Tottenham need that versatility perhaps. But I don't feel like Tottenham are crying out for him the same way they were crying out for Bissouma, for example. So in that sense, I don't know. Maybe it's one of those that they will do. Maybe if they can line up the deal and they think it works, what makes sense financially, and they think it would add to them, maybe they do it. But I don't think it's like one they have to get done, if that makes sense.
Out of interest, Jack, and obviously feel free, Matty, to jump in as well. I think the only thing is that, again, I've been saying this on our shows regularly, and I think, Matty, you've heard me say this as well, moaning on about this, that when a game needs changing, you're playing someone like Brentford at home, we're going to be playing, you know, one of the teams that have been promoted at home. And you're right, you know, we're wielded to that 4-3-3. But when you want to change your formation, which is, again, why I couldn't... I mean, again, Ericsson, for me, maybe that's about football. Maybe that's about Man United as a challenge. Obviously, that's now gone over Sal and it's moved on that. But it would be great to have that kind of player, that lock picker, that can change a game from the bench when things aren't going well. Because we have seen Spurs, over the course of the last season, again, struggle. You know, Brighton at home was a prime example. Spurs failing to break down a team and being sucker punched in the 90th minute. I honestly do think that, you know, for Spurs to... I wouldn't say it's a... Can't say it's a failure of a window to not sign a central attacking midfielder. But I would still feel, even though we've made six signings and it's July and Spurs are back in Conte, I would still feel disappointed if Spurs don't address an area where it does feel still gleaming that they need to do it. So I suppose anything is, Jack, and you probably will agree with me on this to some degree, is that if you're going to spend 60 to 70 million on James Maddison, he's not going to come and sit on your bench, is he? He's going to want to start every week. So I guess the issue Spurs are going to have is if they are going to go for a creative midfielder, it may have to be someone of a maybe less high calibre like James Maddison, who is prepared to be a squad player rather than a player week in, week out, like we're seeing Richarlison now maybe adapt to that role.
Well, that's exactly it. That is exactly it. Is that I can't see Tottenham going for an elite big money number 10, because to do that would mean, you know, ripping up the whole team. It would mean changing the system. Because if you're playing a 3-5-2, you're not playing Kulusevski or Richarlison. You know, you're only going to play Kane and Son. So I would be a little bit, maybe they will do it. Maybe they'll get someone in, you know, a younger player, or maybe a sort of a less good player on 15, 20 million who they think they can afford to have and play. Oh, you'll only play some of the games. You'll only play in Europe. You'll come off the bench. That kind of thing as a sort of plan B, game changer. And maybe Maddison would be that player. I'm not sure. But I just can't see them going for an elite option as a 10 at this point. I just don't think Conte's someone who likes to change systems. You know, Conte is such a like rigid manager, and some people might say that's a good thing or a bad thing. But this is a guy Conte doesn't like to rotate. He doesn't like to tinker. He doesn't like to mess about. He likes to know his best team and play it every week. Like, that's been apparent throughout Conte's career. So that's why I'd be maybe a little bit skeptical about the idea that Spurs are going to go big for a number 10, although, you know, who knows what will happen in the last few weeks of the window.
I mean, Matty, we're getting loads of comments here suggesting that Spurs' creativity will come from the fullbacks. Do you share that optimism, or are you in the kind of still in the line with me where you quite like Spurs to have the option of a central attacking midfielder to break down those teams that we are going to find tough at home after a Champions League game on a Tuesday, Wednesday, right? You know, it's not going to be easy for us. When we're going to be facing, you know, a top tier Champions League team on a midweek, and then you've got to raise yourself for a 12 o'clock on a Sunday or a Saturday, you're going to need a squad, Matty. Do you agree on that? What do you think?
To be honest, I'm a little bit torn on the number 10 situation at the moment. I think from the first day of the January transfer window, I was calling for a number 10 to come into Spurs, and it was pointed out to me by a few of my viewers, you know, that Conte typically doesn't have a traditional number 10. You know, even looking at Chelsea, he had a player like Nemanja Matic playing in the middle of the park who could do both, but was able to pick out that pass forward as well. On the wing-back point, I'm not entirely convinced that we have what I would have hoped to go into the season with. I mean, Perisic is a fantastic addition on the left-hand side, but I think we saw a lot of times last season on both sides that kind of lack of final ball in the wing back, I think, held us back a little bit in games. Like you mentioned, that one against Brighton at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, you kind of think if there was something better out there, despite the brilliant game that Cucurella had, that maybe there would be a bit more of something. But personally, I completely agree with what you said, Jack, about the, you know, Conte kind of being rigid and not trying to change that formation. But personally, as much as I would like to see a number 10 come in, just because I love signing new players, I think that the players are there if we wanted to play maybe a 3-4-1-2, which is what Conte won the Scudetto with Inter Milan, because we have Kulusevski, who in the past has played in a more central role. And I think even the role that he's playing now, I know on paper he's a right winger, but he comes in very narrow and plays in a more central position. I think he could potentially play that number 10 position. And even if you want to further compare it to that 3-4-1-2 that Conte played at Inter, he had four forward options in there in Martinez, Lukaku, Politano and Sanchez. And he had two kind of more typical strikers, target men, like actual number nines. And he had Politano and Sanchez, who were more kind of wide players, but played in a central position and kind of drifted out into the space. And maybe that's where it allowed someone like a Barella or a Christian Eriksen coming from deeper to get into that space. So I think if we do want to go with that system, we probably do have the players at our disposal already. But again, it's just so up in the air about whether Conte might want to go with that. And for me, changing that formation could come down to unpredictability and not playing the same thing every single game. Because if we come up against a City or a Liverpool, I don't think we have the quality to beat them in a tight tactical encounter, I suppose. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes. And I think, again, what Jack said earlier about if an opportunity arises in the window, maybe we go for it then, you know, similar to the Reguilón signing a few years back. If something pops up, we'll make it happen. But I personally am quite surprised that it does seem to be maybe a priority of the board at the moment.
Just because we're on the subject of central attacking midfielders, Matty, I'm going to let you take the next question with regards to Tanganga and Brian Hill. Before we do, only because it's broken the last hour or so, Jack. I say broken, it's just been reported that Jesse Lingard is being monitored by Spurs. It does appear, though, West Ham are still the favourites for his signature. From what you've heard, Jack, is there any chance that Jesse Lingard ends up being a Spurs player by the end of this summer transfer window? What do you think?
I'd be surprised. I'd be surprised if Lingard went to Tottenham. I know that they... I think I remember writing a story about this, maybe in January, just saying that Tottenham had like made an inquiry, they'd had a look, they'd thought about it. I would be surprised. I think that it sounds like West Ham is probably the likeliest destination. Obviously, Lingard had that great loan deal. I imagine that his salary demands are pretty high, given that he's a free agent. He's played for Man United and England and everything. So, yeah, I mean, it would be a big kind of... If Tottenham signed Lingard on a big expensive free, it would be a big sign of how they've changed their policy, because that is not a classic Tottenham signing at all.
Okay, interesting. What we will just do is we will just go for our final break of the show for our listeners on audio.
When you arrive during the season, it's not easy.
This is quite the welcome in North London.
It was a big challenge for me.
And it looks like they pinched all 3 points.
This type of situation make me a bit angry.
Surely not another twist.
I was a bit scared before the game.
Oh, and it's in! It's Harry Kane with the header!
Look what it means to the new head coach.
We needed to work very hard.
Steven Bergwijn! I don't believe it!
They were going home with nothing. They leave with everything.
Yes! It was the tough period.
Oh, and he's curled it into the top corner.
He's done it again!
Important 3 points for us.
Lucas Moura! The fight for Champions League football is going to go right to the wire.
At the end of the season, 1 point instead of 0 point can change your life.
Did you believe top four was possible?
Yes.
For our watching us on YouTube, there's nearly up to 1,000 of you watching us live. Summer transfer window update. We've got the brilliant Matty Hayes, who runs a wonderful YouTube channel talking all things Tottenham, in specific the transfer window. Make sure you catch out Matty's stuff. And we're joined by the wonderful Jack Pitbrook from The Athletic. You can catch him, of course, on The View from the Lane. You can catch him, of course, on his Twitter handle there, at Jack Pitbrook, and write some great things on all things Tottenham. And it will be gearing up even more, I'm sure, Jack, as we approach the new season. Matty, let's turn our attention back around to you. We're going to ask you, we're going to let you obviously ask Jack with regards to the situation surrounding Brian Hill, Jafet Tanganga, and Nico Zaniolo as well. Over to you, Matty.
Yeah, Paratici, as he has done quite a bit throughout this window, is currently in Italy again, discussing many different transfer deals. There's two potential outgoings, one potential incoming. We understand that he's set to meet AC Milan over Jafet Tanganga, which is, I think, a deal that's been in the works for maybe a year at this point. Brian Hill as well, he could be subject of talks with Sampdoria. And on the incomings, Paratici meeting with Roma, we understand for the second time, talking about Nicolò Zaniolo. First of all, on Tanganga and Hill, what do you think the future holds for those players? Is it a potential loan deal, permanent deal? And do you think there's any chance of them being in that Spurs team in the new season?
So my opinion on this, and this might turn out to be wrong, is that I think Tanganga will probably stay. Now, I realise I'm going to have egg on my face if he winds up signing for AC Milan in the next week or so, but from Tottenham's perspective, Tanganga is young, he's homegrown, he's versatile. He can play right at the back three, he's played wing back. I just think Tottenham like having Tanganga around. So my guess is that Tanganga will stay. Brian Gill, well, they took him on the tour and they didn't take other players on tour. Equally, is he actually going to play this season, do you reckon? Probably not. Like, I don't imagine he'd be close to the... I imagine that maybe they want to keep
Carabao Cup, but then maybe Carabao FA Cup. Yeah.
But equally, you know, I imagine that he probably wants to play. You know, he went back to Valencia last year, he played, he enjoyed it. So I would, I reckon Gil might be likely to go. Also, he's quite sellable. Like, you know, there's a real... Not every player is easy to sell, but I think Brian Gil probably is quite sellable. So maybe they would look at him as a way to make a bit of money, given that some other players they've got are probably harder to sell. So that's just my reading the situation at the moment. What I do know is that, you know, they will keep a lot. They've got a lot of players who are not challenging the first team, and they will be speaking to a lot of clubs and a lot of agents about this. And it's quite difficult to predict exactly what's going to happen. I think a lot of, you know, they'll probably make some quite late decisions on you know, can we get this much of player X? Can we get that much of player Y? Does this guy go on loan with an option? And basically keep juggling those plates until the end of the window and see how they can make some money back.
I think if there was a move for Brian Hill, just personal opinion, I think it would show the kind of ruthlessness that it, within this new setup at Tottenham, because there's been so many players in the past where they've come in and had a kind of iffy first season. And look, I think if we had this ruthlessness before, maybe Son wouldn't be a Spurs player after his first season. But for such a big fee, it was a 35 plus lamella for Hill last season. If we're keen to move him on after already seeing it might not work out, I think it just shows the kind of steps that the Tottenham are taking. But as you mentioned there on the incomings, Nicolò Zaniolo, do you think this is a player that the Tottenham could be keen on bringing in this summer? Or do you think that kind of four, if you include star, five midfield options that we have right now could be enough?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Like, I think, you know, they've been linked with Zaniolo a few times, and I can see maybe why he'd be a popular player, but it's not really an area where they're crying out for extra players. Like, you know, I kind of is looking forward to seeing how Skip does this season coming back, and I think Højbjerg is like an important and popular player, even though he's not, maybe Spurs fans don't maybe love him as much as the managers do. So, yeah, I honestly, at this stage, I'd be surprised if they added another midfielder. But I'm equally, you know, I wouldn't be that surprised if Paratici decides to make some interesting decisions at the end of the window, just if he spots something he thinks he can get a player, he can get a bargain on, that sort of thing.
It's interesting. I mean, we always hear about Paratici, loves a surprise. So I guess we'll see what else is going to be thrown up between now and the end of the window. We have to remind people that, you know, the window doesn't shut for another, what, a good month and a half at least. You know, this is the most bizarre situation to be in, that Spurs have done six already. And this is the most bizarre thing, Jack. When we reached out to you a couple of months ago, I thought we were going to be sitting here saying, Jack, will we get a couple in? And we've had six in. So just the incredible nature of Spurs in a transfer window. No one can really make it up. To go back on what you were saying a few minutes ago, Jack, of course, Spurs, they've left home, obviously, for that tour. Obviously, of course, of South Korea, we left home four players. Those futures now are really firmly up in the air. That's Lo Celso, Harry Winks, Sergio Reguilon, and Sungjae-in Dombele. We understand all four did remain to train at Hotspur Way ahead of possible moves elsewhere. Maybe let's start with Lo Celso, and then we can maybe feel it between myself and Matty there. What does the future look like for Lo Celso? Where do you see him ending up at the moment, Jack, with regards to speculation of Villarreal?
I think they'll sell him. I think they will probably sell him to a club in Spain. I think it won't be that hard to sell him. You know, he's got a good reputation. He did really well at Villarreal, especially in the Champions League. He's a starter for Argentina. You know, we're playing the World Cup in November. He's, you know, he's a good age. So I think they will be able to sell Lo Celso. I know there's been, you know, there's lots of talk about Atletico Madrid wanting him. I can see him maybe fitting in there. I think the issue really with Lo Celso, this kind of applies to the rest of those players, is there's no money in these foreign leagues at the moment. You know, the nature of the football economy right now is that all the money is in the Premier League. And, you know, you've seen this from, look at Man City. They've sold Gabriel Jesus to Arsenal, they've sold Zinchenko to Arsenal, they've sold Sterling to Chelsea. Like, if you're a big club and you've got players who aren't in your first team, you're best off selling them to other Premier League teams, because that's where the money is. There's no, you know, there's no, because of COVID and everything else, there's no money in La Liga, Liga, Bundesliga, Serie A at the moment, really. And so that makes it hard. You know, it's harder for Tottenham to sell Lo Celso to a Spanish team or Ndombele to a French team or whatever else than it would have been in the sort of pre-COVID marketplace. So I think that means that it's not an absolute guarantee that Tottenham will sell Lo Celso, but I think they probably will. Or maybe they would just have to settle for another loan plus option or whatever if they couldn't get if they can't get a permanent deal done.
I think that on the point of selling to Premier League clubs, Harry Winks is the kind of natural player in there that you would expect to move to another English club. I think Everton, Leicester, and potentially Fulham have been mentioned as clubs that are interested. Southampton as well. It seems though his time is coming to an end. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of interest in Winks. I think it probably would make sense for him to go this summer. You know, they've got Bissouma, Bentancur, Skip and Højbjerg, I'd imagine, ahead of him in the pecking order. I think that Winks, you know, I think being fifth choice central midfielder probably wouldn't be a lot of fun for Winks this season. So it probably does make sense for him to go. to the Premier League. I'm sure it'll be a case of, you know, seeing which those clubs actually wants to come in with the bids, because is Winks their top priority? They're looking at other targets. So, for the reason you said, Matty, I think Winks will be one of the easier ones to sell because there is that liquidity in the Premier League market. Whereas it's the ones they're trying to sell abroad, I think will probably be harder.
Okay, let's ask you about Sergio Reguilón. Jack, obviously wasn't taken on tour by Spurs. I think for some, maybe it's caught them by surprise, the fact that he's not favoured under Conte. I mean, for me personally, from what I saw last season, I've got to be honest and say to you that I saw more potential in Sessegnon than I did Reguilón. But I've got to be honest with you, I mean, it was quite marginal. You know, it's not like there's a massive gulf in class between Sessegnon and Reguilón. I just think with Sessegnon, there's something about him, and I don't know what it is, but there's just something where I feel he could take off. We know he's worked ever so hard this summer. I mean, he looks physically ripped. We can see that, obviously, in terms of the training that he's done. Reguilón, obviously, towards the end of the season, wasn't really fancied by Conte, it appears. And obviously, that, again, is justified now even more so by the fact he wasn't taken on the tour. From what you understand, Jack, where do you see Reguilón's future? There's been links to Seville at the moment, but from what we understand, Seville can't afford the current proposal that Spurs are asking for. Anything you can shed on this for us?
Well, yeah. I mean, like Lo Celso, it's a classic example. If there was more money in La Liga, I'm sure that somebody would buy him. The guy's like a Spanish international left back. He's a really good player. He's really quick. He's had a fantastic career so far. He's, you know, done really well in Europe for Sevilla. So there's no reason. So he should be a really popular and in-demand player. He's got quite a good reputation. I think it probably does make sense for him to leave Tottenham if he's not going to be first choice. I think Sessegnon and Perisic are the first choices at left wing back now. I agree with you. There's a bit more, maybe a bit more upside to Sessegnon's game. I think Reguilón is really close to being a really good player. Like he's so fast. His movement, he works hard. His movement off the ball is really good. He makes very good runs. I just think his defending is still pretty rash, and his delivery in the final third hasn't really come on. I think it makes sense for him to go. But like with Lo Celso, it's a case of, can you find someone who's got the money? Can they find a club who can give them, you know, their 25, 30 million back? And if not, do they have to accept another loan with an option? I imagine they probably will do, because that, you know, that liquidity isn't going to just magic out of nowhere in Spain. Like the Spanish market is a mess. I think people are going to have to be pretty patient on that one as well.
Okay, let's ask Matty to obviously give you his thoughts, and obviously ask you that question about this final player of the quartet. Matty, over to you.
Yeah, look, on Reguilón, I think it is such a confusing situation, because if we go back to the 1st of November when Conte was appointed, if you'd asked me to pick a player who I think would benefit the most from having a manager like Conte in that team, I probably would have said Sergio Reguilón, and I feel like that was a fairly popular opinion. But it's kind of strange the way it's worked out. But again, that ruthlessness of cutting these players out, I think it's going to be a bit harder to take with Reguilón, because he's proper Spurs. I always go back, I think I said at the last show, Ricky, with the winner we scored against Leicester. Yeah. Reguilón, you can see in the Conte cam, Reguilón in the background is already on the pitch celebrating. We kind of like to see that, but it the time is probably up there. And the final player, Tanguy Ndombele, of course, went out on loan to Lyon in January with apparently an option to buy for £60 million in that, which unsurprisingly wasn't triggered. Do you think we're in the same situation there with just trying to find a club with the money for Ndombele, or is there any chance that maybe he's given a chance at Tottenham this season?
Well, I think, classic example, Marseille, I'm told, want him, but Marseille don't have any money. So I think it's going to be harder to move Ndombele than it is the other two, because I think Ndombele's reputation isn't as good as the other guys. You know, I think Lo Celso and Reguilón have got pretty good reputations, and Ndombele doesn't. I think, you know, people know that he's inconsistent, he's hard work, questions about his professionalism and motivation and fitness and all the rest of it. Plus, he's on quite a lot of money at Tottenham. And plus, I don't think Ndombele would just go wherever he's told. You know, I think Ndombele, you know, and he's got every right to say this, and Ndombele doesn't want to go to, I don't know, Shanghai, a team in China, for example. I think like Shanghai SIPG or Beijing Guoan or whoever. I don't think that's really what Ndombele wants. I think Ndombele thinks, you know, I've played the top level, I've played the Champions League, I want to be playing these big games. So I think it might be hard to ship. I think it will be hard to ship to Ndombele.
Can you see a situation, Jack? Sorry to ask you. Can you see a situation where he actually stays? I mean, he said in an interview recently, he was quoted as saying that he doesn't maybe feel his time's over at Spurs. I mean, from Conte's perspective, it looks like Conte looks like he's done. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I can see him staying at Spurs because that's the default. Like, he's got a contract at Spurs. And so either they find someone to take him, which would involve, I think, a lot of people making a lot of financial compromises and a club who wants to take Ndombele, or he stays. So I totally can see him. The interesting thing is, if he does stay, will he be part of the group? Because let's not forget, before he went to Lyon on loan, Conte froze him out. After the Morecambe FA Cup game, Conte got Ndombele to train by himself and said he's not really part of the group anymore. And because he nearly went to PSG on loan before he went to Lyon. And so Conte's made it very clear that, you know, Ndombele is not just not in his team, but he doesn't really want him in his group. So, but if he does have to stay, and if we get to the end of the window and Ndombele hasn't gone anywhere, then it's going to be really weird. Like, is he going to be training by himself until the January transfer window? Is he going to be slowly brought back into the group? Is he going to be playing with the kids? I genuinely don't know. I don't think anybody knows. But honestly, I'm not optimistic. I am optimistic about them eventually doing a deal for Lo Celso to go and for Reguilón to go, because I think they're in-demand players. They're not going to get the money that they want, I imagine. They may have to accept a loan, but I think it will happen. And Ndombele, I'm not optimistic about it happening. I just don't think he's really in demand enough in Europe. I don't think teams are falling over themselves to sign Ndombele because they know, you know, there's downside as well as upside. As much, I love Ndombele as a player. I love watching him play. I think he's really entertaining. But, you know, I don't think clubs out there are desperate to bring him in.
Okay, let's have it to you, Matty.
Sticking with the outgoings, obviously with the signing of Jed Spence, and I know we kind of touched on it earlier, with Spence coming in, Lucas, now we're hearing, has had a chat with Conte about potentially playing right wing back. The future of Matt Doherty and Emerson Royale is one that's of a lot of discussion on the Spurs fans. Emerson's agent, I think, is one of his representatives, his dad, came out and said that apparently Conte told Emerson that he'd be the number one choice at right back. As we said earlier, you know, potentially Matt Doherty could be that number one option as well. Do you expect either of those two to depart this summer?
I think it will depend on what offers they get. Like, if somebody comes in, I don't think either of them are unsellable. I think Doherty is likelier to stay than Emerson, probably, just because I think Doherty has finished the season as first choice. He had a really good run before he got injured. I think Royale works hard, but I just don't think Royale's a fit for the system. You know, he's a good player. He's like a good defender, good athlete, a good all-round pro, a popular individual. But I don't think he's got the quality to be a wingback for a good team. And maybe Conte can coach that into him, but I wouldn't be optimistic on that. Like, he's, and you know, we've seen how many times last season did we see teams coming up against Tottenham when Royale was playing right wingback, and teams would realize you could just let him have the ball. Let him have the ball because he's not going to hurt you with his crossing. And so you can team up on they can kind of double team on the other side on Reguilón or Sessegnon or whoever, and let Royale have the ball. So I think the secret's out a bit that he hasn't got the technical quality to hurt teams. So I think it would make sense to sell him and keep Doherty. That said, you know, we've said this a million times already. You know, it's not really a seller's market at the moment, because there aren't teams out there desperately. You know, you're not going to get an auction for your player. You're not going to get 10 different teams coming in trying to buy your players, particularly if they're not, you know, if they're squat fringe players. So I can't say with any confidence, I'd be lying if I said Tottenham will definitely be able to make their money back on Royale.
Well, no, it'd be hard, isn't it, at the moment, based on his performances, to think that. I agree with you, Jack. It's one of those where, again, we'll just probably see how that pans out in terms of towards the end of the window. You'll be glad to know, Jack, the grilling is nearly over, although hopefully it's not been too much of a grilling. No, we'll just quickly say for anybody in the comments, really knows over 1,000 of you watching us live, so feel free, if you want to just maybe throw some names in, we'll do a bit of a roundup towards the end. Anybody that we haven't mentioned that is relevant, obviously, no point mentioning the likes of Ericsson, been and gone there, done it. But anyone relevant in the moment in the window you want us to ask Jack about, feel free to put it in the comments and we'll ask Jack towards the end of the show. To maybe just look at, Jack, from our perspective, players that maybe could look to head out on loan, where their futures are. Troy Parrott, Pape Matasar, two players that have been on this tour of South Korea. Also, Joe Roden. Do you think all those guys are likely to leave on loans as things stand? What's your thoughts?
I think Parrott will probably be loans. You know, he had a really good... He finished the season really well at MK Dons last year. I think the next step for him is to go back into the Championship. First Championship loan at Millwall didn't go great, but I think that's a good... I feel like he can... I think he can have a really good Championship loan this season. There's a lot of Championship clubs out there who want him. My guess is Championship loan for Parrott, although I can't tell you exactly who yet. Saar, I think... Another year on loan, I think. He's still very young. I don't think his last season at Mets was as good as his first season at Mets. But he's obviously, you know, he's a big talent. He's, you know, one of the best young players in the world in his position, Saar, certainly. You know, I know for a fact that when Tottenham signed him, they had, you know, heads of recruitment at other clubs calling them up, being, oh, wow, you did well to go and get Saar. You know, he's someone we'd wanted for a while. So the club clearly think very highly of Saar. I would guess... another loan for him. I don't know whether it would be in England or abroad. Maybe they'd like to have him in England, just so they can keep a better eye on him. Roden, honestly, with Roden, I think a loan makes less sense than Roden. I think it would make more sense to sell Roden than to loan him, just because I don't really feel like he's a player Tottenham are developing. I feel like he's a player, you know, I just don't think he's going to play for Tottenham, really, as a first teamer. So I think it would make more sense to sell Roden. At this point, I think Roden's a good player, but I don't think Tottenham think he is cut out to be an established regular first team player for Spurs. I know that Conte likes talking him up in press conferences. Jose liked talking him up in press conferences, but for whatever reason, I just don't think it's going to click for him at Spurs. So I think at this stage, rather than him having another year spent playing no football, it probably makes more sense for Roden to go and play somewhere else. Whether that's, I mean, I imagine that would either be bottom half of Premier League, top half of Championship. I saw he's been linked with Fulham. I think Fulham would be a great move for him. But I'd say bottom half of Premier League, top half of Championship, if possible, on a permanent. If Tottenham can make their money back, I think they paid, 10, 11 million quid for him when they signed him, I think they'd be very happy.
So, Jack, we've got some comments flying through. If Matt, you want to take some of that coming in name-wise? Anyone you want to throw towards Jack?
The first one would be Memphis Depay, because I know a lot of Spurs fans have been on that one lately. Is there anything on that, Jack?
Not that I've heard. There's not to say that it's impossible, because, you know, lots of stuff happens that I don't know about. But I can't... With the option they've got now, with Kane, Son, Kulusevski, Lucas and Richarlison, can you really see them adding another versatile forward? I just can't see it. I can't see it.
Okay, let's fly through these. Jack, is there any way we could bring in Gvardiol, Torres or Bastoni? We are begging at centre-back. Thanks, Ricky.
At this point, I'd be surprised. I think Gvardiol's beyond them, too expensive. Torres, I think, also probably too expensive and turned them down in the past. And Bastoni looks like he's probably going to stay at Inter at this point. I think they've signed Longley as a kind of, you know, placeholding option. You know,
right.
Get him in for a year. He's good cover. He's good cover for Davis. Can play in the middle of the three as well if they want. And then maybe Spurs, if they want to, they can go back to Torres, Bastoni and Gvardiol in 2023. But right now, I'd be surprised if they went big for one of those guys in the last few weeks of the window. I just don't really see it.
Okay, can I just say, for Jack's sake, we're not going to ask Jack about Leandro Damiel. We're not going to do that. We're not going back to 2020. I can see Jack saying,
bring it on.
Leandro Damiel, any chance again, Jack, for how many more windows, Leandro Damiel?
It's the last piece of the jigsaw. Get him in.
Oh, God. What jigsaw was that one? Was that the one from 5 years ago, Jack, on this one?
The ADB one.
I bet. James Ward-Prowse is a name that's been mentioned in the past. What do you reckon, Jack? He looks like a Spurs player. I always say that. What do you think? No?
I don't know. I just don't really... Do you reckon he's a Conte player? I'm not sure. I just think they've got four good options in the middle of the pitch. I don't look at them and think, yeah, they need one other... Because I don't think he's much better than what they've got. I actually think Bissouma and Bentancur are better players than Ward-Prowse. I think if they got him, he would be more of the sort of Højbjerg skip level. And yeah, he's, you know, he's a good lad and he works hard and good set pieces. But to me, that link, I'm not saying it wasn't true because I'm sure they did look at him, but I just didn't look at, I don't think, when I watch Ward-Prowse play, I don't think there's a Conte player.
Okay, no problem at all. Matty, have we missed anyone out there that's come up? Do you think anyone else that's come up there worth asking? Wondering.
I think the majority of there that we've already covered already. There's mentions of Mark Gahey and Yuri Tielemans, but I assume they're just the same answers as we've had a second ago.
Well, so Gahey they really like. Prasci definitely really likes Mark Gahey. The problem is, and you know, there's a guy, you know, he's young, English, homegrown, plays for England, can play across the back line. You know, there's a lot of ups. I think he's a fantastic player, Gahey. There's a lot of upside to him. But he's got 4 years left in his Crystal Palace contract. Crystal Palace, you know, don't get pushed around if somebody wants their players. What they've got, Palace have got absolutely no incentive to sell him for anything short of crazy money.
Yeah.
Like the prospect of Tottenham doing a deal with Palace for Gahey, I think, is basically zero. You know, maybe in 2 years' time, if he hasn't signed a new deal, they can come. Or maybe next year, if he hasn't signed a new deal, they can come back and negotiate. But I don't think it's possible. But they do definitely like him.
Okay, that's interesting. I know there's been something. I mean, we're going to close this over with Matty in a second, but Bastoni, do you think that's one they'll revisit, Jack? You just said there's a placeholder with regards to Clement Longley, only because there seems to be such a cry for Bastoni. Even though the guy's got no Premier League experience, I understand there's a massive hype over him because of the nature of just the fact he's worked with Conte before, very popular with Antonio Conte. Do you see a romance rekindling there in the future?
Maybe. I mean, a lot depends on Conte. Like, if Conte... Next season, this time next year, Conte will either have left Tottenham or signed a new deal. Now, if he's left Tottenham, I don't really see why Bastoni would come to Tottenham. Yep. If Conte signed a new deal, he's going to be at Tottenham for the future, then maybe they would get back in for Bastoni. Like, Bastoni would have had another year at Inter. I also, you know, by that point, maybe it would be easier to get him done. Maybe it would be less, you know, the Inter fans would have kind of got their heads around the idea of their kind of young hero leaving. But yeah, that my impression is that they've signed Longley for a year because they can't get their top target. And then in a year's time, they can have another think. And maybe, you know, if Tottenham have a good season this season, they're back in the Champions League for 2023-24, then maybe they can get Guardiola. Maybe they can get one of these guys. But I think this is something they'll revisit in 12 months' time.
Okay, fantastic. Thanks so much, Jack. Let's hand over to Matty to close the show. Matty, over to you.
We've left the two best questions to last, Jack, and definitely the two hardest as well. So a bit of a two-part to this one. Firstly, do you think Conte genuinely feels he can challenge for the title with this squad? And secondly, how many more players do you think Spurs can sign in this transfer window?
So it depends what you mean by challenge for the title. I think he must feel that he can give City and Liverpool something to worry about. Because if not, why is he there? Like that's one thing that Conte's always made clear, is that he doesn't just want to be... Obviously, getting fourth last season was an achievement, but Conte doesn't want to be a guy who celebrates getting fourth. Like, for him, fourth is the bare minimum. And now he only wants to stay if he thinks that he's managing a team who can put a bit of pressure, I think, on the top of the table. I think Conte must feel good about it. Can they actually do it? Well, I think they will need... I think the thing is, I can see one out of City and Liverpool having an off year in such a way that Tottenham can overtake them. The question is, will they both have an off year? Because, like, City and Liverpool, generally speaking, over the last 5 years, have been averaged around the sort of 95-point mark in the Premier League, which is...
Yeah,
if you look at the history of the Premier League, that is ridiculous. Yeah. Ridiculous consistency.
Absolutely.
Now, I reckon Tottenham will probably wind up around, let's say, 85 points this season in the Premier League. Now, I can see one out of City and Liverpool dropping, having a really bad season, winding up around 85 and being close to Tottenham. But can you see City and Liverpool both doing it? That's when I think it gets difficult. So, look, I'm not predicting Tottenham will win the title, but I think that they will have a competitive season, their best season in five or six years. That's my prediction. In terms of how many more players will they get in, well, I think it will depend first on who they can get rid of. The more players they get rid of, the more money, the more space they have. I can see them doing one more. Honestly, I'd be surprised if they get two more, because I think they don't really need two more. And maybe they'll think, well, look, it's... it's better to go in than what we've got rather than to take punts on extra players. So, yeah, I would. That's probably how I see it.
Jack, you've been superb. It's been a great, great show. Lots of love in the comments here. I say thank you so much again, guys. Over 1,000 plus of you have been watching us live for this summer transfer window update with the brilliant Matty Hayes and the superb Jack Pitbrook from The Athletic. Jack, I'm a real pain, but a couple of more names come in. And I feel like I'm obliged to ask you because we've done quite a few. We've had a couple in Benoit Badashelli, I think, a centre-back there.
Oh, yeah. Jack, he's meant to be really, really good. I believe he plays in Monaco.
Okay. Centre-back.
Honestly, I haven't watched him play personally. I'm not here to give an evaluation on him as a player. But as an option, honestly, I kind of feel like they'll sit with Longley for now, unless they feel this guy is so good, they've got to get him in. If they feel like Badiashile is so good, they've got to get him in now, because next season they'll be competing with PSG or City or Liverpool or whatever. And maybe they would do it just to beat the market and beat their rivals. But otherwise, I think it's more likely that they will put this all on ice for a year and come back to it next summer.
Okay, and the final one is, is there any chance of a Kim Min-jae finally signing for Tottenham? A name that doesn't seem to be going away.
No, Kim and Jay's maybe the new Leandro Demiao, the new Adama Traore, the man linked with Tottenham in every window. I know that this has been kind of floating around. I think it was in the Jose era, maybe summer 2021, I think, or summer 2020. This was quite heavily spoken of. I believe that the Korean national team were coached by an old friend of Mourinho's, a Portuguese manager. So that, I think, and the suggestion was that he'd recommended Kim to Jose. Honestly, at this point, I'd be surprised. I think that Tottenham, it doesn't really seem to fit exactly what Conte would want or what Tottenham needs. So at this point, I would probably file that under unlikely, although I realise I'm taking a bit of a risk saying that.
Okay. I mean, nickname the Monster. It seems like he's made for a Conte team with that kind of nickname. But we shall see, Jack. We shall see. Jack, for anybody that doesn't follow you or listen or know your content, where can they find all the great work you do via The Athletic? How can they find you?
So you can find me on Twitter at Jack Pitbrook. You can read my stuff in The Athletic along with my colleague Charlie Eccleshare. You can hear me on the View from the Lane podcast with Charlie, James Moore and Danny Kelly coming, which will be going back to twice a week service at the start of the new season. And you can hear that podcast through all of you either on The Athletic app or through your normal podcast listening services.
Amazing. Jack, been a right pleasure. And Matty, I'm sure you agree, great show with Jack. Always great on a day where Spurs have made yet another signing. Matty, you know, we know you've been covering off a lot of Spurs', if not all of their transfer stories this summer. Where can everybody find the great work you do as well, Matt?
Yeah, I just first want to say, Ricky, as always, thanks a million for having me on the show. Long-time listener, so love being on here. And as well, Jack, an absolute pleasure to chat to you this evening. For anyone who doesn't know my channel, it's Matt Hayes Tottenham Blog. Just talk transfers all the time. We're closing in on 16,000 subscribers, so I'd love any support in that. And I'm on Twitter as well, at Matt Hayes THFC, where I talk about transfers and my dogs. So I'd appreciate any support over there. But as always, fantastic show, gents.
Yeah, totally agree. Make sure you give Matty a like and a follow and a subscribe. And again, same for last one as well. Give us a like and subscribe. Again, been brilliant having the wonderful Jack Pitbrook from The Athletic joining us. Jack, thank you so much again for all your time. Guys, thank you so much for your support as always. We are back with you. We've got bumper week coming up. We're obviously going to be reviewing Spurs' pre-season friendly against Rangers. Plus, we've got even more transfer shows in store. We just need some more transfers now. No pressure on Matty. No pressure on Jack to write about them. But we'll see what we can do from the wonderful Matt Hayes, from the brilliant Jack Pitbrook. For me, guys, thank you so much for all your support from Arsenal and Spurs. Keep safe. Keep well. Let's have a bit more coolness in the UK. And as always, come on you Spurs.
Sports Social Podcast Network.